global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Greg Jarrett. Stocks are modestly lower. Many investors just waiting to see what Janet Yellen says on Friday in Jackson Hole. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P 500 is now down 0.2%, down 5. The Dow is down 0.25%, down 45. The NASDAQ is down 0.1%, down 6. The 10-year is down 4/32. The yield 1.56%. West Texas Intermediate's down 2.8% at $46.76 a barrel. COMEX Gold is down 1.2% at $13.30 per ounce. The yen is at 100.54, the euro 112.48, and the pound is at 132.36. Let's go to Europe. The FTSE, just before the close, is down 0.6%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.25%, and so is the CAC in Paris. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. I'm Greg Jarrett. Pim and Peggy.
Thank you very much, Greg Jarrett. This is the Bloomberg Advantage.
I'll sit with you, baby, for a thousand years. Nothing's going to touch you in these golden years.
Well, joining us here now is Mike Kalin, CEO of Futurity First Financial Corporation, to talk about a Labor Department ruling this spring, controversial ruling that affects people going into their golden years in retirement. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning.
Mike, you've been following this Labor Department rule from the vantage point of the insurance industry. Talk to us about why this ruling is controversial and one that you are hoping will change sooner rather than later.
Sure. You're right. We have been tracking this since its development throughout 2015 into the phase where it became a published regulation in April of 2016. We've been tracking it from a couple of perspectives, primarily insurance agents who provide valuable retirement advice have largely been excluded in the publishing of the regulations. We believe it's very important that we, make everybody aware of the valuable role these insurance advisors play and work however we can to get a more workable regulation so that agents can continue to provide the advice and customers get the valuable protections that they need.
The basis of the ruling, Mike, that came out in April was to address conflicts of interest in the industry where it pertains to retirement accounts that people have, 401ks, IRAs. And why would trying to clarify or make more transparent conflicts of interest be something that you see or the industry on the insurance side sees as a negative for consumers?
Yeah, I don't think that's what we're objecting to. Currently, insurance agents meet suitability standards for the sales that they make, and efforts to increase the standard of advice to be one of a fiduciary standard eliminate conflicts are not what we're objecting to. What we're objecting to is the form of the requirement, such that customers can continue to get the quality products that they need, and these agents have an outlet to make appropriate sales to customers. So we're not objecting to the principles. We're objecting to the way it has to be executed.
Well, I wonder if you could expand on that, Mike, because is it a question of just costing more money that all of the agents and all of the RIAs, the registered reps and so on, and money managers, anybody that offers advice to anybody that's, as Peggy described, a kind of a retirement plan, a defined contribution plan, that basically they're going to have to be under a fiduciary umbrella, and that could mean a lot of consolidation in the business or a lot of people just leaving the business altogether?
Yeah, we are concerned about the overall increase in cost to implement the required supervisory structures, but we think that can be dealt with. We're looking at various technologies. We're looking at various ways of suitability reviews. We think that can be quite efficient for the advisors and to make sure that the clients still get what they need. The second thing is the type and the form of compensation. I think, we would all agree that, consumers need advice and
you mean the compensation that agents would receive, for example?
Absolutely.
Like for getting an annuity payment, like selling an annuity or an insurance product. Is that because most of that is all paid up front?
Yeah, the payment of a commission attached to a good sale, I don't think is objectionable. I mean, a lot of sales of many products are made with commissions. You know, what we're working towards is to assure that the disclosure of compensation and fees is done in an easy and efficient format. And, clients deserve the ability to understand what their agent or advisor is paid. So, again, we're not objecting to that at all. And we continue to work with within the industry and with the Department of Labor to try and define what that's going to look like.
Thank you very much for joining us. Michael Kalin is the chief executive of Futurity First Financial Corporation. They're based in Hartford, Connecticut. He's speaking about the new Department of Labor regulations coming under the ERISA rules having to do with fiduciary responsibility for those.
And yes, payment will be interesting. There are a lot of lawsuits that have been filed around this rule. One of them there should be a decision on starting tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes.
A lot of it has to do with the fees that are charged in those various accounts. You're listening to the Bloomberg Advantage. This is Bloomberg.
This is the Bloomberg Advantage with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Challenges facing HP. Here to tell us more, Anand Srinivasan, Bloomberg Intelligence hardware analyst and expert in all things technology and semiconductors. Bloomberg Intelligence, of course, providing real-time research and context for a variety of industries, as well as markets and government factors that affect businesses. Our terminal customers can access this function. Just type BI Go on the Bloomberg. Anand, thank you very much for being here with us in the studio. HP, just define it for people, because I've been looking at an Omen desktop and it's tilted at a 45-degree angle. But tell us about HP right now. What did they make and what's the distinction between the other HP?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. So in 2015, at the end of their fiscal year in October, HP, Hewlett-Packard, split into two companies. One was the corporate-heavy server, storage, networking, and the services business, and the which also included software, and the other business included the client-facing, the client devices, which included PCs, printers, and printing-related services. So it was roughly an equal split from a revenue perspective, two roughly 50 billion or so entities. And they were both very, very large entities. And since then, both before and after the split, both entities have undergone substantial restructuring. And the story now with HP Inc., which is the printing and PC entity that reports earnings tonight, is one of continued restructuring from a cost perspective. The PC business is not doing so well. The printing business is in structural decline. So amid these the background context, which isn't pretty, how much can you improve costs so that as revenues decline closer double digits, your earnings per share profile is substantially better than that? That's the story here with HP Inc.
Anand, it's interesting because that outlook sounds a bit ominous. However, when I look on the Bloomberg terminal at the share price of HP over the past 12 months, it actually looks like it's returned about 25%, so in the green.
Yeah, so absolutely. So there's a good amount of investor optimism on that things can only get better from here. And we have seen one quarter of a data point from IDC and Gartner suggest that U.S. PCs are on the mend a little bit. For the first time in several years, that particular year-on-year figure turned positive. And the declines, if nothing else, are getting much more muted relative to prior years. So, again, the PC business is doing okay. Not great, but getting better, let's put it that way. And the printing business still has its challenges. But amid that, HP is doing a lot of restructuring. In the PC business, they're focusing on profitable share gains. and getting out of certain markets, certain segments, certain products even, where it hasn't made sense for them to compete. There's just too many players, too little of margin dollars to go after, and it's not adding value to their other businesses. In printing, they're trying to go after the office printing market, which is the big devices that you have one per floor in the in offices generally, and that's a great market for them, because as fewer, even though fewer devices are sold, they tend to be more expensive and higher margin, but the supply game for them is very, very important. So even though they sell you 100 printers, say, the refresh rate of the supplies and the toner, the cartridges, the ink, that's a big business for them. That's a very profitable business for them. But you have to maintain a scenario where you sell the devices, but you're able to capitalize on the supply.
And are investors looking for global growth as well in these areas, office supplies, printers, globally, or just the U.S.?
Yeah, so it is absolutely a global market, but the U.S. and Western, the developed markets, tend to be a little heavier on these areas relative to the rest of the world. Again, the higher end skew is richer in the developed markets relative to the developing markets. So in printing per se, It's very important to focus on the developed markets.
And just to note that the earnings will be released after the close of trading today. Analysts are looking for earnings per share of 45 cents and about $11.5 billion in quarterly revenue. Anand, tell me about that. I got to just ask, because I know that, you know, you and I, we talk a lot about products and things and gadgets, and there is a new line at HP called Omen. And I got to say, I want one, even though I don't know what I would do with it. It's got a 45-degree angled access. It also has these multiple slots for advanced storage, and it's got some kind of new thermal dynamic cooling system in order to supposedly make the machine run even better. Thermal design for, as they say, unstoppable performance. What does that mean?
So the gaming segment within the PC area is one of the bright spots in PCs. It's actually done really well. It's a very high-end market. It's predominantly a desktop market. And the Omen product line is catering towards that segment. And here, price is of little issue. The specs of the product tend to be very, very high-end, both in terms of the computing power and the chip that's inside it, along with the interfaces that go with it, as well as the graphics capabilities of those PCs. They tend to be power hogs, but again, that particular demographic doesn't care.
They got liquid cooling, I think, in some of these. And they got the dual graphics chips. They've got the NVIDIA GeForce, GTX, and the AMD Radeon.
Yeah, and these are products, just to give you a sense, the average PC sells for in the 750 range. These are products that start in the 1500 range. So from a U.S. dollar price perspective. So it's a very high-end product. Margins are substantially higher than the mid-single-digit margins that you see on PCs worldwide. So this is a good segment, unfortunately a small one.
And when you say gaming, you're talking about video games. These are consumers who are buying it for the video game capabilities?
Correct. So PC gaming has become a very strong area. NVIDIA has been, which is a chip maker that focuses on graphics chips for this category, has done really well. And the interesting thing is gaming and PC gaming, even though PCs have declined, PC gaming has done really well.
So fewer computers, but more people playing games on them.
Correct.
And if you happen to have a spare $2,500, maybe we can interest you, Peggy, in a Omen 900 gaming desktop PC. What do you think?
That sounds pretty advanced for my video gaming capabilities right now, but I could aspire to that, Pam.
Thank you very much. Arnon Srinivasan, he is Bloomberg Intelligence hardware and semiconductor analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. This is Bloomberg.